time now, my friends, on TalkSport and Talk to celebrate the lives and legendary rivalry of two of Britain's biggest sporting superstars. Their first full-on encounter in 1981 was watched by around 16 million TV viewers, 3 million more than saw John McEnroe beat Bjorn Borg for the Wimbledon men's title a couple of weeks later. Martin Ruane and Shirley Crabtree were household names, but maybe not by those names. Step forward, please. Those gigantic superstars of grunt and groan, those knights of the canvas, giant haystacks and Big Danny.
These two finally going to face each other. Singly very seldom see. But they're finally in the ring opposite each other. Now, Big Daddy, he won't be able to manage much of his boom stuff here. Well, he tried it.
They were big lads. They had a combined weight of well over 65 stone, and their story is brilliantly and movingly told by sports writer and author Stephen Bell, Steve to his mates, in Big Daddy versus Giant Haystacks, a super heavyweight story, certainly that, published by our friends at Pitch. And I'm delighted to say Stephen Bell, Steve, joins us now. Good morning, Steve. The book starts and is structured in a fascinating way, because you start with the build-up and the announcement of this long-awaited encounter between the two of them, and then it moves into an absolutely tragic story, which happened a few years later. But at the heart of the book, in the early stages, is Big Daddy Shirley Crabtree's brother, younger brother, but kind of older as far as being the boss. Tell us about Max Crabtree, if you would.
Max became a bigger character the further I got into the researching and writing of the book. I always knew that Max, Shirley's brother, was the sort of head honcho of Joint Promotions, and that played a huge part in Shirley's career and Big Daddy becoming such a household name. But the more people I spoke to, the more research I did, it turned out that he was more than that. He was the real driving force behind it all. He were a force of personality behind the scenes. A real fascinating character, probably deserves a book of his own one day.
Now, I mentioned in my intro how hugely well-known the celebrity around these guys. I mean, brilliant photographs in this book by Stephen Bell, of Giant Haystacks advertising a new range of stamps. Big Daddy had his own cartoon strip in Buster Comic for that kind of turn up and Children in Need and things. And this was largely because wrestling was not only on the telly Saturday afternoons with Kent Walton doing the voiceover and stuff, but also they seemed to have been constantly touring. In some cases, it's almost worked to death by Max Crabtree. Their schedule sounds appalling, punishing at times.
But it was like a real well-oiled machine, and that's what Max has deserved so much credit for at that time. They had 10 to 15 shows per night on for a few years, up and down the country, a complete working, travelling road show. And then one show per week would be recorded for television, and that's where you would get your big stars performing. Once or twice a week, it would all climax to one big show. A lot of time that were timed around the FA Cup final and the hour's time slot that was integrated into the build up to the FA Cup final. And then the big part of this story is when Max decided that he could do one bigger than that, get it its own real big extravaganza annually, which he did for 3 years on the trot. And the third of them was when he finally decided to give the public what they wanted, which was Big Daddy versus Giant Haystacks.
Now, that was an amazing battle at the time, made all the tabloids, quite rightly, but Max seemed to realise it was going to be, you know, it was that first encounter between the two. And they met each other in the tag team ring, and that was always quite carefully, I suppose, scripted is the word I choose, maybe stage managed or whatever, that they weren't actually up against each other for very long in those encounters. There's an amazing moment in one of these encounters I remember, maybe it was the first one, when Big Daddy bounces Giant Haystacks, who weighed well over 40 stone, out of the ring.
Yeah, and I think what that is, that says an awful lot about Martin Ruane, Giant Haystacks. He was such a big man. By that point in 1981, maybe it was wrestling exaggeration, but he was billed at 46 stone then, but it was very believable, you know, this giant man.
It was 6'11", wasn't he? 6'10 and 6'11".
Yeah, 6'10", 6'11". Yeah, absolute gigantic man. A real wow factor about him when he emerged from behind the curtain, which really did propel him to the top of the business. But he was very agile, very strong, and he was very good at his profession. Now, Shirley Crabtree had been 20, 30 years earlier, but he was well and truly past it. Now, he was in his early 50s by the time that bout came around. Very immobile, very rotund, shall we say. But that finish, as you say, I think that this rivalry had been going on 5 years by that point, and it had been dangled in front of the fans for so long and the nation for so long. As you say, Max was finding ways to get around not actually pulling the trigger on it. He knew that he could only get that big payday once. So he was having all kinds of gimmicked matches and tag team matches where younger, fitter lads would do a lot of the work, and Big Daddy and Giant Haystack had just stopped short of coming to blows. But it had grown really frustrating to the fans by that point, and he knew that he had to do it. And I think that what Giant Haystack Martin Ruane did with that big finish, when he throws himself backwards over the top rope, goes crashing through a table before wrestlers going crashing through tables were really a thing, and slumped onto the floor, it gave it a real big show of the finish. You know, it was an exclamation mark on that finish, almost like a thank you to the fans for bearing with them for all that years, but they got the result they wanted in the end.
Fascinating chunks of the book, a real like slice of all our social history, including very near the beginning. You talk about a meeting that's being held at the House of Lords post the Second World War, like 1947, when they're basically trying to lobby with interested parties, a man called Norman Morell, to try and get some kind of overall codification, like Marquess of Queensbury rules for wrestling, because it had become, before the war, it was tainted by the kind of fairground, very violent bouts and a free-for-all, it sounds from your book.
Yeah, that's what had happened, and I actually covered that in a previous book. I'd done a biography of a local legend. I'm from Huddersfield, and we've got a local legend, Douglas Clark, who was a war hero, absolute bona fide war hero, and rugby league legend. And he went into professional wrestling in the 1930s and became Britain's first ever British heavyweight champion. So I knew about a bit from that era, and that is exactly what happened. By the time the war came around and all sport was sort of suspended, wrestling was on the verge of getting suspended all by itself, because it was getting various accusations thrown at it. One being the predictable one of fakery, would you believe it or not? But the other one was that it was far too violent. It was leading. It was beginning to be more of a circus type show, but with extra violence. When it was about to come back after the war, Norman Morell stepped in and wanted to make sure it didn't go, it didn't revert to type and didn't go back down that route. So yeah, he got a group together, his local MP, five very distinguished people from their fields, and it got parliamentary support to have these new, more structured rules that was going to be more family friendly. And that's what enabled it then through the 50s and 60s to become this huge national institution, really.
See, I remember it very clearly because I'm of an age, I was a kind of, a kid in the 60s, a teenager, early teens in the 70s. So, and my nan's second husband loved the wrestling. And he lived out Frinton, and we'd go to Colchester, the Seabirds. And it was people like Mick McManus, Jackie, Mr. TV, Palo, Kendo Nagasaki, those guys. And they were superstars, and I had no idea till I read your book that even with those guys in this era of wrestling, the Big Daddy, Giant Haystacks, late 70s, 80s, there was an amount of crossover into the USA or with American wrestlers and with Japan as well, fascinatingly.
Yeah, well, wrestling, professional wrestling globally, it's always been kind of a small business, if you like. There's an awful lot of trading between talents, between countries. A lot of talent does tour the world. Britain was quite different at that point. The guys tended to stay locally. But Giant Haystacks did an awful lot of travelling. He loved it. He talked about it quite a lot. That one of the benefits, despite the discomfort being his size, travelling on planes, being able to see the world, he saw the opportunity to see the world, was something he didn't want to pass up on.
Never mind his discomfort. Imagine being stuck on a seat next to him on 11-hour flight.
Well, I think when he became a big draw and they were paying a lot of money to get him there, I think they got two seats, apparently. Wow. They got two seats for that. What I love about doing the research into these projects is when it all starts to knit together and when you realise that the real global boom of professional wrestling, the American version with Hulk Hogan in the 90s, you realise that Big Daddy had been sort of an influence on that in terms of how it was done. Max Crabtree had been an influence on that on certain individuals, and the word had spread far and wide about how they were doing things. And then Giant Haystacks was actually hired in the mid-90s by World Championship Wrestling in America to be an opponent of Hulk Hogan's. Now, that didn't quite work out, but he did go over there and spend some time over there on American pay-per-view television. And as you start to realise that these guys actually had an influence on that big global boom, as well as just the, being British icons.
And in the end, creating, as we know, movie stars like Hulk Hogan, like The Rock, people, John Cena and people. Martin Duane, as well, I learned from your book, very quite moving, actually. Very devout Catholic, wouldn't wrestle on a Sunday.
Yeah, well, that, again, that were another little quirk of fate. One of the reasons I got into writing this book, and I've just said I'm from Huddersfield, that's where I live now, but I'm originally from a small mining village of Featherstone, just down the road. And that was a town where Mal King Kong Kirk was also from. Now, my dad knew Mal. I got to know his daughter. And Mal was the guy who people may or may not know. He was the guy who died in the ring with Big Daddy in 1987.
That's what I wanted to get around. That's at the very start of the book, and that's incredibly moving, heartbreaking, because like Douglas Clark, you mentioned, and like Big Daddy, he'd been a rugby league player, and he was... By the time, you know, there's a chapter later in the book when he says goodbye to his wife, an American woman, Eleanor, I think her name was, who he brought over back to this country. And they were, he was going to get out of the game and run a pub or whatever. And then he has an encounter, and it sounds like a very normal encounter in the wrestling ring, which ends in absolute tragedy. Could you tell us about that, please, Steve?
Yeah, so as I say, Mal King Kong Kirk, he died in the ring. And the reason why I brought it up in your previous question is because he was probably only picked to be in that match because it was a Sunday and Giant Haystacks wasn't there, wasn't available because of his Catholicism. So Mal King Kong Kirk steps in, goes down to Great Yarmouth. And it was just something that they'd done hundreds of times before. It takes a Big Daddy splash, but he just didn't get up. He turned purple. He was having an heart attack in the ring. It took a while for people to realise that it wasn't just part of the act. And he died. Very, very tragic. And it was... In the 2 or 3 years immediately before that, wrestling had got some bad press. There'd been some exposés in the press, and it was getting a bit tired. It was the same old act all the time. And it was, it had gone from being sort of a beloved national institution to something of a of an embarrassment to the country, it felt like, all of a sudden. And this, the headlines from Mal's death was the last thing it needed. You know, you'd got Big Daddy suddenly appearing in coroner's courts, things like that. Because they were investigating the death, and there was a chance for a while that it looked like there could be some criminality laid either at Shirley himself or at Joint Promotions. In the end, the coroner decided that it was completely natural causes, and Mal was going to have that heart attack anyway. But the reason why I positioned that at the start of the book is because it was sort of a little bit of the story that really meant a lot to me personally. It, well, that being the window into the book reflected almost it being my window into the story, really, because that is where my research really started through knowing that bit so well.
It's an amazing read with absolutely amazing photographs, very much of their time. There's Giant Haystacks with a page three girl, for example, and he was known as this monolithic figure. And I remember very clearly, in fact, I've got the clip standing by, something that used to turn up on things like It'll Be All Right on the Night, when he was in a TV studio and some TV presenter kind of eggs him on, obviously all set up, teases him into giving him a bit of a throw. Can you tell us about that, if you will, finally, please, Steve?
We're on Irish TV, and the host was really quite famous and well-known in his region. Is being quite combative, I think, or
a bit dismissive, or quite
humorous towards wrestling. And in those days, it was very differently to it is now, and they didn't take kindly to that, and they were very protective of the business. And it was always thought that if the wrestlers themselves or the wrestling business itself admitted that it was all a show and all at work, that it would be the end of it. They were happy for this to sort of play this dance with the audience and the press, where the audience and the press kind of know. We kind of know that they know, but we'll never admit it. We'll keep that that sort of line of defence all the time. And so when they felt that they were being challenged in a way that they felt they had to defend the business, and so it's unfortunate that this guy's clearly annoyed Giant Haystacks at the point they're about to do this bit of a demonstration of a move. And as you say, it picks him up and unceremoniously slams him to the floor, and it makes an almighty thud. And he's just left there. You can see him twisting and writhing in agony. I think he did actually break ribs. And
I think, as you'll hear now, folks, I think you can actually hear the ribs crack at one point. So we're going to play that script now. Listen to this, folks.
Oh, God. Oh! Well, the second part is where I would straight across him, and he certainly wouldn't move.
And, this, and the people say it's play acting. Oh, dear. Oh, give me football, I need it.
But there's no faking that, is there? That was incredible.
Yeah, and the bit that's so great about that, if you watch it visually, is as Martin Rowan says the words, if I were in the ring, I'd jump across him, and then he certainly wouldn't move. He's already turning. He's already turning and walking away, like, completely dismissively.
It's a brilliant read, folks. One of the best sporting books I've read so far this year. It's certainly our Talk Sport and Talk book of the week. It's called Big Daddy versus Giant Haystacks, a super heavyweight story by Stephen Bell, published by Pitch. And I urge you to get hold of a copy of another book of Steve's I've read, which is called the Chapa Coenzee story, I think you pronounce it, From Triumph to Tragedy, about that dreadful air crash in South America, which happened, I believe, 10 years ago this very year. It's a fascinating book, as is this one, Big Daddy versus Giant Haystacks. And huge thanks to Steve Bell for telling us about his latest work.